Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. with Daniel Weinstock and Mike Garrett, founders, partners in Divide and Conquer Incorporated, and owners. Well, we're in the butcher room of Mabel Block Meat Company. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Right on, thanks.
So we're in Culver City, not the first place you think of when you think of great barbecue and brisket in America, right?
Correct.
You know, and we'll talk about the road you got here, but why Culver City?
Central. Yeah, so people can come from all ends, you know, which does happen on the weekends. We were just talking about the traffic world, not the easiest to get to, but great local base and support, as well as then great central spot for people to jump on a freeway and come see us.
Yeah, I mean, the 405 is right there, yeah. The 10. Look at me, living here 2 years, and I sound like I know how to drive.
You're throwing some numbers around.
So, Daniel, you've been interested in food, I think, as long as you could walk.
Very true.
How did you get started? Grandmother, mother,
yeah,
father?
Yeah, you know, it is the grandmother, at, you know, at 6 years old. You know, not knowing much, but knowing that I would call her up and say, I'm coming out, can you make that roast game herd again? And it was just really basic day-to-day food that she was making and was into, and I loved it and really gravitated to it. My mom was also a great cook. And, you know, my sister was exposed to it, but there was sort of an innate draw and understanding, I think, to food. So from, you know, I remember cooking my whole life, you know, all the way through, you know, well, grade school, even high school.
Did you start cooking in high school? Was that your first job?
Yeah, my first job was baking bread at 13. Great Harvest Bread Company.
And how did you get around those child labor laws?
Yes, best interview question of my life. The owner asked me what CD was in my Discman at the time, which dates me a little bit, I guess.
Date yourself.
He
what
said,
was it?
Well, that was 90 or 89.
So
that was, I don't know.
Yeah. 13 years, yeah.
And what CD was in your player?
It was Soundgarden. It was Super Unknown.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and he said, "Great, you're hired," and really probably just was happy that there was anything playing. And you know, I worked hard to started off chiseling raisins off the floor and working the cash register. Got to the kneading table and. You sort of know if that immediately was struck by the camaraderie and that sort of hands-on work that and I worked all through high school and college and got to that meeting table and here we are.
And so, Mike, you're native Angelino, correct?
Correct.
But you got into the restaurant hospitality business through a different way.
Through the back door.
Through the back door. Isn't that always the best way?
It
through
is.
Through the entrance, through the kitchen, through the side entrance.
That's
How did
it.
You get started in nightlife and hospitality?
Actually, yeah, it was nightclub world. So on your music side of the thing, I was a DJ. You know,
oh, yeah?
Through college.
What'd you spend?
All kinds of stuff, mostly alternative dance.
Oh, so like classic college.
Yeah. It was a funny time. It was the 80s.
Okay.
So I was hitting all kinds of stuff, everything from new wave to just kind of pulling disco that was recently, you know, not cool to, you know, kind of more cutting edge stuff, you know, cultish things. And used to shop in New York and bounce all over the place. I'm trying to find 12 inches and all kinds of things. And then my partner was all hip hop and funk and stuff. So it was great. It was a good combination.
What was the, what was going out like? What was, I guess, like the scene like in the 80s when you were DJing?
Yeah, it was amazing. Actually, L.A. had a better scene then, I believe, than any other point. You know, and everywhere. 80s were just off the hook, pushing the edge. There was a lot less formality and laws and stuff like that. So the warehouse world was really cool, and people were doing that. Crossover music all over the place. So mixing stuff that you wouldn't typically expect. So bouncing from really funky rock to stuff that people hadn't heard from the 60s and 70s through whatever currently was going.
And so how do you parlay that, being a DJ, into actually going to open up places? Like, how do you get someone to trust you? Are you, at first, just the cool guy who gets brought in to bring in the other cool guys? Or do you get someone who's like, I have my idea, give me money?
Definitely more on seeing a need, you know,
sure.
And places that weren't happening, you know, and that was kind of our thing. We knew we had enough of a following wherever we kind of just there was such a niche that was unfulfilled in certain areas. So back in the day, that was in San Diego. I grew up here. I was in San Diego getting away from, you know, college life. And then back in L.A., it was in Santa Monica, which, again, was not the music hub of the world. It was a tourism world of the hub. But there was Malibu, Venice, Santa Monica, and the surrounding areas that didn't have any, you know, music. We got tired of driving to Hollywood.
So even from the beginning, you saw a need for building up local community spots.
Completely, yeah. And then the music, if the food side, especially with barbecue, music was gathering people. And
yeah.
That was always cool to me. And then as a kid, the restaurants, like a barbecue place to me, was this total social, you know, atmosphere, this energy when people came together. It was very primal, you know, on one level, but it was the most social food of any that we came across.
Now, growing up in this area, what was the LA scene like for barbecue in the 80s?
It's pretty weak, you know. It's always been kind of throw together some ribs and slap some sauce on it, and it was very basic. Again, I think people like the primal side of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a meat aspect and some sauce, and not always refined in any way, which barbecue in its nature and its history was not very refined. It was, you know, poor cuts of meat that were smoked
sure.
and kind of brought to life. But L.A. was pretty weak, and that was, I always thought, God, if we had a better quality, you know, barbecue, it would go crazy because of the social aspect of it, and the people that we could gather would be great. Then we were introduced to Texas style, and that
yeah.
blew our mind because there was nothing touching that in L.A. And to this day, it was still a pretty weak, you know, base. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
And at that time, though, too, you get, you know, what are people's tastes and preferences?
In the 80s and 90s.
Yeah,
right?
80s and 90s. Yeah. For barbecue in L.A., and they're what you're exposed to when you start. You know, you are exposed to a lot of things. People are a lot more educated and have more just, I think, interest in food in general, but also travel for the sake of food, and that's attracted other truly authentic styles of all types of cooking. But here, you know, it was a lot of barbecue where you're not even necessarily using a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's big bayback ribs
yeah.
and steaming
yeah,
them and covering them and baking them with sauce and... You know, you got some of it and some of the gems, but people weren't necessarily going out and finding it. And I think that's ultimately what was really, as we sort of navigated our way through different restaurants and me's through different kitchens. And
we have to mention one of the kitchens.
Okay. Yes.
Because we'd be remiss if I mentioned that you spent time at Spago.
Yes.
So, little known restaurant, you know, little known chef to come out of there, old Wolfie. I mean... You know, you must have understood then, being in a restaurant like that, that quality of ingredients, among anything,
yeah.
was the most important.
Yeah, absolutely. No, Spago Beverly Hills, particularly, is a really special place. And
how did you wind up there?
Bangkok and Lee Efter really took me under the wing. I was a junior sous chef at a place called Dominic's on Beverly, West Hollywood, and
just
sort of
recent.
Yeah, it changed. That was a loss.
It was a classic.
That was a classic loss for LA. Yeah.
It was a great spot. And I, you know, I found my way into the culinary world without a formal culinary education. I was a rhetoric major in a small school in Maine, Bates College, and that. Sort of ending up with, but yet obsessed with food.
Yeah.
And so I was at Dominic's, and you know, before that, in between, you know, the bread baking days and Dominic's, you know, find my way in other kitchens and restaurants, working with chefs, and I ultimately realized if I'm going to do this, I need to make the next step. I had an intro one day through an old friend of a high school friend, and. I had a tryout at Spago, and it was an intense 12-hour day, and they basically, I think it was too young and naive or ignorant to even consider that it was a crazy idea. It was seemed like the right one, and they offered me a job and thought I'd probably quit, and then I ultimately was the first, or one of the first cooks to be promoted to sous chef without a formal culinary education.
And, you know, when you're thinking of opening up a barbecue shop, how much do you draw from the Spago days?
A lot. Because that place is pretty magnificent and special. They, again, Lee Hefter and Wolfgang really you don't realize it, but they are truly, they in their own right are as a craftsman, though. They, mm-hmm. The level of engagement with the product and process was always there. So from making your own pizza dough to making your own pasta to, you know, and any, you know, you talk about there's different Asian influences, but they are always authentic and not overcomplicating it. So you get creative, but you're still making something very pure to what that food or what those products, how, what they should be and how they should be eaten. So, you know, we're breaking down whole lamb. We were, you know, taking whole rabbit and doing, you know, cooking them in various ways, five ways, or we're making tomatoes, you know, or making a fresh pasta with wild mushrooms. But the simplicity and how those different elements come together is all about that training and understanding, and then that leadership through the kitchen and knowing when you have time, to, when you can go to the next level and learn more. And that they really instill that.
I mean, that respect for the ingredients and having them do what they're supposed to do is mm-hmm. sort of the fundamental
Absolutely.
For barbecue. How did you two meet?
That was actually through kind of the wives. It was the initial thing over at dinner, but I had a lot of restaurant background, and Daniel was working on a couple of different projects, pulled me into one through a conversation, and it was amazing, and it was down the Arts District. Mm. So we started kind of scouting this thing out, and it was a really old firehouse that they pulled us in. They wanted to convert. And the project was, you know, it was a little too ambitious for the owner. It was a crazy guy, but it was an incredible opportunity to get into the Arts District while it was just starting to hit. The
dust.
It wasn't even open yet, and a lot of places were just starting to hit. So hitting that new frontier and working together on that kind of gave us ideas to say we can do anything. We can pool different talent, and mm-hmm. we needed to do that on that project. And start researching all this stuff, we started kind of realizing, you know, why don't we find some other locations, pull some talent together, and really create some things we've always dreamed of or envisioned. And that was, barbecue was on the list, you know, and we met a couple of really talented guys, and at that level, just the smoking of the meats and everything else became something that was not happening in the city. And we're going, this is unbelievable that it's not happening. And it's in its simplicity, and then the quality, you know, control and experience that he got from Spago, knowing that we could draw people to a location that was this centrally located, if we just kind of execute half as good as Texas, we're in good shape, and I think we've surpassed that.
And I think that time that we, you know, that first moment when we did meet after dinner, basically realized that, you know, it's, I think there's a mutual respect and understanding for how, you know, we're approached the business, and, you know, at one point my wife's like, you know, not sure if you even realized I was there, but I'm like, no, of course, no. Mike and I have a good conversation, right? But we sort of bookend each other, and in that time, I was, you know, still always, you know, I playing around, making my own vinegars at home, building my own, you know, wood fire spits in my backyard, smokers, etc. And again, you know, I'm always sort of drawn to butchery and that hands-on approach, and really just, you know, and then in seeing, knowing that it's as a business, you know, how do we, meeting somebody who can really complement a skill set where we're both looking at, you know, numbers always, and, you know, it's, you
survival.
Know, I was,
survival.
You know, I went from Spago to business school, UCLA, to some other big restaurant groups. So when we met, it was time to get back into our own niche and what are we proud of, what do we want to be involved with, it's going to make us happy, as well as just, you know, just adding to our respective skill sets.
Amazing. Well, look, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about how you open up a barbecue restaurant in Culver City, some of the menu, and about the mixing of different regions and styles that you guys have. We have a track from the archives and the library live performance on Snacky Tunes here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. I'm here in the butcher room of Maple Block Meat Company with Daniel Weinstock and Mike Garrett. So the year, when did you guys start talking about this? It was like 2011, 2012,
yeah,
when you start looking around. And barbecue, I mean, barbecue was on its way up as a trend, but it's not, and we'll get to like what it is now 5 years later, but the idea of really bringing regional Texas barbecue and other any regional barbecue to LA was sort of still a new idea.
Completely.
Tough margins. You need quality meat. You can cook something and know that 16 hours later you don't have product for the day. What makes you guys decide to go into this business, and what makes you decide to do the style that you're going to do?
I think just one taste of Texas. And especially coming from, you know, a barbecue desert, you know, in LA that was so void of anything that was quality or anything that compared, we felt again like that we hit like a new frontier, you know what I mean? That we were really venturing, and that's what's exciting to me, and I think Daniel as well, is breaking new ground.
Sure.
And so if this is a business and a food style that's so misunderstood. You go to Texas and it's like common sense.
Oh, it's like second nature.
Exactly. Yeah, and exactly. People would rave about it, and the time or two you'd have would be so memorable, and we've got nothing that compares. It's like, why is this such a void? And it's because it's hard work. It's really a hard labor of love to make it happen. So we feel like we had the bigger ingredients being local based, LA based, so we had a foothold on that. So then if we could pull together the technique and really deliver what Texas had, now we had something that was really special.
It also really excites us, and well, still excites us and did then too, is like what was really missing, or you know, I think was, you know, 2010, 2011, our barbecue spots who were opening up for the right reasons, and then where they truly were just genuinely loving barbecue as barbecue and not overcomplicating it. So my style of cooking was always something that was like less is more, the simplicity of it. You know, a brine for a turkey or chicken doesn't need 50 ingredients, and a beautiful steak doesn't always need massive rubs or sauces, salt and peppers. You know, is in restraint, sort of is king. And I think that approach to barbecue had really struck us in Texas was just the best ones were the ones who were just not overcomplicated. Simplicity and the patience and the commitment to it. Yeah.
Did you guys go on a Texas barbecue crawl?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Where did you head?
We hit everything. We hit Smitty's. We hit Black's. We hit. Was our favorite.
Well, and, La Barbecue was one of our.
Was cool.
Our
obviously, Franklin's.
Yeah.
But Louis Mueller was like the old school one, and then seeing his kids breaking off showed us another thing. So, in kind of looking at that, Louis Mueller's place is so epic. You know, 1950s kind of smoke. You know,
baked
taste it when you walk in. Yeah. That it gave you kind of that heritage, but then to see the two younger kids breaking out with the barbecue and the other spot, John Mueller's spot. Yeah, that was really cool to see that this was touching a nerve. That just good, simple delivered food was really what people were missing.
And the craving of others who were just part of that culture. I mean, it's a culture that's created for a reason.
Yeah, so how do you start to develop this? And I guess knowing that every brisket that you make is probably going to be the best one you make. You know, it's like you're always moving forward, and you look at these guys, they've been doing it for 30 or 40 years, and it's, you know, it's like any craft, like sushi or anything like that, where it's like, it's constantly refining, perfecting. How do you develop your recipe, and then how do you know when it's time to open?
Right.
Or do you just go like, this is the open date, and it's as good as it's going to be, and we'll know that we're going to learn on the job?
Yeah, that was really refined well in advance.
Yeah.
You know, we had done a bunch of tastings and a bunch of practice, and we had had a couple of events where we actually had other things going on, and so we had the barbecue as like a side note, and people were just losing their minds over it. And that response alone, and again, it was based in the simplicity, it really helped us realize we hit a nerve, you know. So that was the best tasting, you know, and testing ground, you know. So it was like with that response, the people that were like just weren't necessarily barbecue aficionados or looking for it was a great feedback to the general public. And then you knew the foodies would see the real value in what we were doing, the quality. And now we felt like, wow, we can cover both. We can cover the higher end with elevated barbecue as well as the general public and people that just love primal. Let's get down to meat.
And you know, one the caveat in trying to find the right space is one is like we're not going to do barbecue unless we can actually use whole logs. We're not. There's no gas assist in our smokers, no electric assist in our smokers, and we've, you know, built our smokers in the restaurant in Texas, and they're as close as you can get in LA County to a real these amazing nostalgic pits.
It's so funny. It's like instead of bringing your oven from Italy, you're bringing in the smokers from Texas.
But we built our trailer smoker, in Texas too. And again, it's like spent our money on insulating the firebox, and it's all about and making sure there's enough storage for wood, and that there was a big cutting board to hold enough meat to carve. And that thing is, you know, as no frills, but we really just wanted to make sure we can duplicate that barbecue. And that was an important part to our location.
And it's interesting because Texas Monthly came through LA and said that you guys not only had the best brisket, but also the way that you presented the food and cut it on the board was very much home to Texas in style and aesthetic. And is that just, do you think that it's not just the aesthetic, but the actual process of cutting there and getting it to you that way? Does that add to the flavor and the experience?
It's simplicity and restraint. I mean, honestly, it's not much more beautiful, nothing, a lot more beautiful than just a beautiful brisket or a beautifully, smoked and properly rested piece of meat on a butcher block. And all of these spots in Texas, they are 100 years old using a 60 or 100 year old butcher block, you know, where they're carving meats for a reason. They started off in one way, but there's a reason they're doing it. And, you know, we wanted to make sure that we're emphasizing a great eating. It's all a little bit selfish. We have just about great eating
so
food
primal.
And how we could be stuff that we want to eat, and our family and our friends that have loved it. And then how can we do that in a way that's engaging without being overly kitschy or
and putting the carving, you know, the butcher block right in the middle of it as a show and as that's the star, you know, the quality of the meat. It doesn't have to be about us. Yeah. It's really about what you're seeing, and it is a love affair with meat. And much like a sushi bar where the sushi chef is king, you've got your carving and your pitmaster is the star of the show, and the quality's right in front of you to see. And that's what I think with Texas. Texas had nothing to hide. They want to show you the quality right in your face, and not hide anything, you know. No. And that's a big part of it.
Now the interesting thing is that you also pull from other regions in some of the flavors that you do, which you don't really find. It's usually you're of one clan. What other regions do you pull from, and what made you decide to pull from other barbecue areas?
Well, the reason why you end up pulling from other regions or in styles it is not because there's no intention to be a hybrid by any means. It's our tastes growing up and what we like, in the same way that you've got different influences depending on your family and their background. And in LA, there's tremendous Korean populations.
Melting pot.
You got cultures from, Guatemala and Mexico. And, there's all of these sort of add to those experiences you have eating over time. And what we ended up, sort of realizing as this menu came together was we like the... It's just a style of different elements of barbecue that we really like, and the way vinegar and acid sort of contrast the richness of the meat.
North Carolina,
right? Exactly. Yeah. And if we were in Texas, we would have probably less. Our eyes would be open to maybe less than we are in LA.
Sure.
And with that, they're less likely to have things like our green sauce, which really is about wanting something with herbs and vinegar, and is coincidentally sort of like if salsa verde and chimichurri had a baby. But it's really because we like the way it all tastes together with fatty brisket,
Argentinian slant.
Then I guess by opening in LA and in the sort of this postmodern world where it's not very 100 years of tradition of barbecue, you have the freedom to do that.
So it's nothing about, we like the vinegar, we love chopped pork, prefer chopped pork to pulled pork, it's a preference.
Yeah.
It happens to be an influence.
From a whole hog.
Exactly, yeah. And, and with that comes together, and just with our team and traveling experiences, it's like, okay, what do we want? What do we want to eat, and how is that? And it was just well responded to.
Influences from the team and different people out there.
Sure.
Their travels have kind of brought little pieces to this that were really great, So some of the Southern influences were truly authentic, and that's helped a lot.
So finally, it's 3 decades from the 80s in the barbecue scene. You guys are right in the middle of it, some of the top guys in the game. And every day it seems like there's another person opening up barbecue, whether it's brick and mortar or some guy who's just doing Saturday and Sundays. Do you feel that you guys are, that there's a community? Is it all sort of brotherly love?
We do.
Or is it sort of that, competitive restaurant business?
Honestly, for us, we embrace everyone. If you're doing barbecue and you love what you're doing, you're spreading the gospel of barbecue. So everybody's got their own style. We love our style, and again, less is more. It's simple, and it's flavor, and it's quality of product, and all of our butchering, and in the craftsmanship of every element that engages with the product process. And if you're doing that too, with regardless of what your style is, then great. Then that's helping. Then we're barbecue. So there's it's a business, and so you're always there's
of course,
and we're as
of course
competitive in that we want to maintain our brand and quality and continue to and not compromise. But there's you feed off each other.
Yeah, and it helps when there's a scene and a collective, whether strong or loose, of people making LA a barbecue town, which you guys are doing. Well, thank you guys. Where can people find you guys? In where can they come get the barbecue? What's the address?
It's 3973 Sepulveda in Culver City.
Awesome.
It's between Venice and Washington Place, just north of Tito's Tacos. It's a good landmark, and we got our parking lot.
Right. How often are you going to get Tito's? Too many times.
We got a lot when we first opened.
We got a lot. It's a lot.
We first reconstruction.
They're good friends of ours.
How's your Instagram game? How's the social game?
It's pretty solid.
Pretty solid. And where can they find you on Instagram?
Maple Block Meat Co.
Okay. And then Maple Block Meat Co. for the website as well?
MapleBlockMeat.com.
Oh.
And we've got, yep.
Do orders online, cater, bring it to your house.
Thing are, we do some pretty awesome catering and some great events and our mobile smoker. Again,
oh, I saw
the
it
same,
on the
same,
line.
Same
yeah.
thing that we were making food, pulling that thing, you know, making for our construction crew while we're doing R&D.
Oh, yeah. The smell starts getting out.
Like, oh, yeah, you drive that thing,
you drive that thing
and park it somewhere, you're going to get
pull that thing all over 1,000 miles away. It's pretty great. So we pull that and we got, you know, come on in, say hi. We got really love our craft beer too. And, you know, daytime, you know, we. You know, are always making our own sodas, come in, counter service,
hang out,
have a sample some brisket or ribs, like an ice cream shop.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys. We have a live performance coming up after this music break. It's another track from the Snacky Tunes archives here on heritageradionetwork.org.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system.
Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledged the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
Welcome back to the show, Radical Dads.
Thanks.
I'm sorry we did not have the star of Home Alone and Home Alone 2 as a warm-up band.
He's our usual opener.
My personal favorite was The Good Son, when Macaulay Culkin drops the F-bomb. Don't F with me, Mark. You know? And remember that?
I never saw that.
Dude, I don't know. I can't even say it's on Netflix. I don't know. It's like, you know, they like tried to become like a serious actor at like 9.
But then he kind of pulled it off later on, right?
I don't know. He was in what, Saved? Party Monster?
Party Monster, that's not, yeah.
I don't think anyone pulled off anything in Party Monster. I went back and watched it. I was like, you know, I knew it didn't hold up, but it really didn't hold up.
Oh, no.
So welcome back. Thanks. You guys will always now have a special place in my heart for the show you guys played yesterday. Thank you so much. How have you been?
Really good.
Great.
Oh, excellent. Wow. Thank you for the lengthy response of that.
Next question.
Oh, boy. We're going to run out of stuff. That's the only question I have is, how are you doing? I thought we could stretch that. So anyway, so things are good, right?
Yeah.
Just blowing up.
Put up a record.
Huge.
Put up a record.
We opened the restaurant on Avenue C.
Oh, yeah. Recently. Radical Milk Duds.
Following the trends.
So you got the new record. How do you feel about that?
Well, it feels good to finally have it out there in the world because it's been done for a little while.
How long was it gestating?
I don't know.
Like 14 months.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like an elephant baby.
Yeah. We had to wait till the culture was ready for us.
Yeah.
And we felt like now was the right time for that.
What do you mean when the culture is ready for you? Do you mean like...
We're not sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, album number 2?
3.
Three.
Yeah.
What's it like going into the junior album?
Don't fuck this up.
Yeah.
No.
I feel like the sophomore album's the more like, don't fuck this up.
Yeah. So
I feel
fuck
like
that up.
Like,
then
everyone loves the first one, and the sophomore's like, we gotta change it up, man. It's like, don't really change up the sophomore album. I feel like junior album, you can get a little more experimental.
You gotta wait for your Revolver.
Oh, yeah.
Revolver Soul Sergeant Pepper. But Chris and Lindsay hate the Beatles, though, so I shouldn't be
Beatle
bringing
talk.
Up these references.
You hate the Beatles?
I don't hate the Beatles. I just am not, like, Beatles fanatic.
Well, that's fine. I mean...
I'm more, like... I don't know. There are a lot of other bands that are more important to me from that kind of
We had an
era,
interview with someone, and this came up, and she was just, like, freaking out. She was just like, what do you mean you don't love the Beatles? And I was like, I know, right?
Oh, right under the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, third album. What was the approach this time?
Just send it to Julian. We recorded at Silent Barn with Julian and Carlos, and
awesome.
Which was great. And they have a how to describe their attitude towards recording? I don't know.
Cavalier.
Really? Cavalier. Guns blazing.
Yeah, like just like get it done.
Yeah, second or third take, Julian was like, "Well, you could do it again, but it's probably not going to get any better." Whoa.
I don't know. That
that's make that sound.
That's when you try and go for the fourth take, he just plays the button. He's like, we got it.
Is that
Wow. That's scary.
Okay. So second, third take. How did you feel when someone's like, you got it?
Well, every time we were just like, oh, yeah, that's fine. It was kind of cool to not, like, stress out about it. We were just sort of like, yeah, that'll do. Like, it's not going to get that much better. We know what we're doing. We're just... gonna knock it out.
But it was good. It wasn't like it was like, that's not gonna get much better. Are we back? We'll just We'll cut all that out. We'll start this over. And
is that a thing?
So what was it like only going in for two or three takes?
Great.
Yeah?
Yeah, we're into it.
It felt good. There's good energy in that studio, so.
We mostly recorded it live, like just playing all together.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it wasn't a lot of like overdubbing, because that feels very unnatural to us.
You got a lot of energy from just playing it live?
Just feeding off of each other.
Yeah.
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 Just giving some good bass face, drum face, keyboard face.
Oh, yeah. The whole time.
Plus, we're getting old, so we weren't physically capable of doing too many more takes. So it's like, let's just get it done in one take.
I got 9 takes in me today.
No more overdubs. Yeah. It sounds fine.
What, do you guys want to play a song for us?
Sure.
What song are you going to play for us?
In the Water.
It's called In the Water.
Okay, cool. Here we got Radical Dads live on Snacky Tunes.
Hopefully the amp will sound okay now.
It's about to catch on fire.
boss. You want to do two more takes? Yeah, you know what? We got it. We got it. Never mind. We got it.
Stick with that one.
Julian said that was fine.
Yeah. Julian just texted me. He said, listening, totally fine, moving on. I heard you guys are also working on two other projects. About 9 months in the studio each, right?
Yeah, totally.
You are no longer going to be Radical Dad's name only and Radical Mom.
Yeah.
But Radical Dad and Mom in IRL.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's pretty crazy.
And you guys also timed the babies to be born at the same time. Like,
pretty much.
What was that conversation? Was that coincidence?
We've just been planning our calendars for so long.
Yeah.
Like, look, we got a torn 12 months. So we pop these kids at 9.
Yeah.
So you're excited?
Yeah.
Super excited.
We're going to have to break up the band, though.
Really?
Yeah, it's not ironic enough. We'll start a new band.
Yeah. Radical Parents. Or, like, Super Cool Family.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Probably.
Adult Responsibility.
That's a good one.
College Fund.
College Fund. There we go.
Yeah, 401k plan.
Right.
So that's so exciting. What's it like to be an active band with two individual kids on the way?
We're reining in the activity.
Yeah. So now we're like late night, like drug, whiskey, infused sunrise parties.
Yeah, we're kind of like, well, can we play first? Is that cool?
I know we're the headliners, but yeah. Tired.
We had a record release show. It was really fun, and we were, you know, we played third, I think, or something, and we stayed up pretty late, and it was awesome. We were up to like 3 or something, and that hadn't happened for a little while, and then we woke up the next day, and none of us really had been drinking or anything. We were all obliterated. We felt like we had just, like, been hit by a bus. So.
It happens.
I don't know. It's kind of embarrassing. We're old.
Are you guys, like, healthy lifestyle, like healthy eating, no gluten, no meat, none of that stuff?
We're pretty healthy, but, you know, I have a sweet tooth. I have a soda tooth as well, so it's a little
tough,
a little dicey sometimes. But, you know, I've heard that all that gets filtered out and the baby will be totally fine.
It's probably just a coincidence that the baby's kicking as soon as you have a soda.
Yeah. Really acting up when you have that 8th Twizzler, right?
Just a coincidence.
So with the new album out, what's the plan? Are you going to try and fit in one more tour before the babies are born?
Nope.
No.
We're gonna see what happens after they're born. And then maybe we'll tour the world.
Yeah, we're getting to the later stages of the pregnancy stuff. So it's like when you're deep in the third trimester, you don't really want to be touring.
No. So I know I'm not allowed to fly, but can I play 14 shows in a row?
Yeah.
And what's the decibel limit on the belly?
Oh my god, that'd be so funny if you had like the headphone on your belly. Like, I think this is where its head is.
I think, you know what would be good is like that breastfeeding pillow, like putting that around myself for
also
a show.
Also protect from the guitar.
But yeah, I think I'm going to do it.
I think you could silkscreen some of those up. Yeah. Sell them, right? Radical Dad breastfeeding pillows.
This is when our like marketing really takes off.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's such a natural, organic fit to go to the, like, you know, one Radical Dad onesies. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
Stuff right.
We've custom made those before.
Have you really?
Yeah. But they were just, like, one special off. Orders.
Special orders?
Nephew niece specials.
Yeah.
Can we hear another song?
Definitely.
What are you going to play?
Cassette Brain. Yep. This is our baby's favorite.
Oh yeah, does the baby like make movements when it hears one song versus another?
I think that our baby really likes Robbie's drumming because whenever the guitars drop out and it's just the drum, she's like kicking along.
Doug and Annie are here.
Oh my god, Annie Hart!
Where are they?
They just walked into the.
That's
other
so
room.
Funny.
I mean, I love Annie Hart. She's put out a new single.
Yeah.
She did.
She's throwing my baby shower.
Oh, she is.
Yeah. You're invited. You can come.
Really?
Sure.
I thought it was like a girls only. That's Brooklyn.
Yeah. Brooklyn. It's gender.
It wouldn't be rad if we didn't like mix up the rules, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, can we dedicate this one to Annie?
Definitely.
Okay, cool. Here we go. Radical Dad's live on Snacky Tunes. Thank you. so good. If you were to get swept away, where would you want to go?
New Zealand.
Ridgewood, Queens.
To Andy's house.
Swept away for that. So, I know you got a few gigs coming up.
Yeah.
DJ gigs.
We're doing some DJing.
At the Ace Hotel.
Yeah.
6 hour sets?
Minimum.
Four hour sets.
What's your long tune bathroom break song? Or I guess if it's all three of you, you can rotate out, right?
Well, we were Cortez the Killer.
It's Cortez the Killer.
Good option.
That's a classic Greg Bresnitz, DJ Snacky Tunes.
I used to start with Ginger by the Lilies. That's a good long one to start with. It's not super long.
Yeah.
It's like 6 minutes, right? 5 minutes?
We're just going to grind it out with a lot of long ones.
Something like 10-minute Yola Tango.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Nightfall's on Hoboken. It's like 17 minutes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's like a mix. Like, you want to, like, flip songs enough so you're, like, moving through it. But then sometimes you're like, a song every 2.5 minutes, you get a little get a little crazy.
Yeah.
Are you pumped? You going to get some martinis? Well, I guess you're not going to have any martinis.
I know. I was wondering if they did any special, you know, virgin cocktails.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
Fresh juices, things like that.
Yeah.
And then, so those are your DJ gigs, and where are you playing next?
We are going to be playing at Rough Trade.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. On the, I think it's Thursday the 16th.
Of April.
Of April, yeah. And we're doing a little thing on WFMU as well, so that'll be fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so happy Rough Trade figured it out.
Yeah.
They were shut down for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's just like, ooh. That was, I think, a collective groan in the music industry out here. Just like, how did you not think about soundproofing?
Right.
Okay. There's like 9 condos across the street. So April 16th. And then what are the kids? So like, is this like, we're getting close, like the last time.
That might be life? It for New York.
Oh, man.
We have a show in Boston on April 25th.
Boston.
Bastard.
Favorite burrito places up there? Anna's Taqueria?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Love Anna's.
Or Felipe's. Like
Felipe's is
same,
good, but
Anna's.
Anna's is, what's your order up there? What you like?
You know, whatever. Chicken burrito.
I get the quesadilla.
Super burrito.
I'm with you. Quesadilla. They do this, like, weird. I think they, like, dip it in oil and fry.
Like, they just, like, oh, man.
Like, I'll get a burrito, but get it inside a quesadilla. I just like that crunch. Yeah, I don't. It's like funny. Like I never expected to have my favorite burrito be in Boston.
Yeah,
but you know,
New York needs to figure that out.
Yeah,
we got plenty of Viennese restaurants, but how about a good Mexican spot?
So, and where are you playing in Boston, and when?
O'Brien's Pub.
Nice.
With Ava Luna, with Julian and Carlos.
Oh, hey, yeah. Ava Luna. O'Brien's Pub, is that in
Alston?
Alston.
Yeah.
I think I used to go to, I want to say Sunday night's 80s night there and dance. I used to live like down the street on Wadsworth.
Nice.
You miss those days?
I do not miss Boston. Okay. I think we've touched on it before about my no love lost for that city. Yeah. We don't have enough time. We have enough time for you guys to shout everything out and play a song, but not enough time for me to rant on Boston. But I have gone back literally just like I've gone in, gotten off. The highway, gotten on, hasn't gotten back on the highway. It's worth it.
It's totally worth it.
And the last time I went, I got one for dinner, and then I got one, and I ate it. I brought it home with me, had it for breakfast.
Good move.
Yeah. That's what we call a pro tip. Real pro tip.
That is a pro tip.
So I want to make sure we get one last song in, but where can people get the album? Where can people get the information? Where can people get Radical Dad's onesies and silkscreen prams?
The website.
Which is?
It's radicaldads.com is one, and then it's radicaldads.bandcamp.com.
Shout out to Bandcamp.
Yeah, Bandcamp.
Bandcamp.
Thanks, Bandcamp.
Forever killing it.
Killing it.
And are you on the gram? Instagram?
We're not very big on the gram. We are on the gram, but yeah, very minimally.
I've heard social media, just like Farm to Table's, going to be taken off pretty soon.
Yeah,
Trent Swatz is here.
We got the Twitter pretty decent.
Yeah, at Radical Dads for your requests for onesies.
We just started a Tumblr.
Oh, nice.
Why not?
Yeah.
Find us on Yik Yak.
Oh, my God. Have you used Yik Yak at all?
Yeah, I'm using it right now.
Oh, yeah. This pizza's great.
This place is awesome.
This place is awesome. What are those people doing in that weird box? Well, thank you, guys. Shout out to Ben Sisto for setting everything up yesterday. Shout out to the fam. Shout out to Anna out in L.A. Shout out to Joe, my dog, who's probably just laying on the couch. Shout out to Kentucky and Kansas.
Yeah.
in the March Madness. It's big wins. Big wins. I don't
so
know.
Proud.
I'm not really into sports. thank you so much. What's the last song you're going to play us with?
Don't Go.
Don't Go?
Yeah.
But we have to.
I know.
But what are you going to play?
Don't Go.
Don't Go.
But what?
But who's on first?
But who's on first? We always have time for bad jokes. You know,
there we go.
Thank you so much. Again,
thank
shout
you.
Out to Cherry
thank
Bomb.
You.
And we'll see you next week with Philip, I think. All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.